Let's do this. The Cult of Hockey podcast by the faithful and for the faithful. I'm David Staples of the Edmonton Journal, and I'm here tonight with Bruce McCurdy. Hey, Bruce.
Hey, David. How are you doing tonight?
Great. 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 How are you doing?
A little better than the other night. That game was a little more enjoyable, a little more satisfying for sure.
Yeah.
And was the Dallas game where not much went right for the Oilers, and tonight a whole lot went right. And so they came out comfortably on top of a 6-2 win over the powerhouse Colorado Avalanche. Hard not to like that.
And clinched a playoff spot. So that's huge, obviously, from the despair of earlier this season, which was much discussed and chewed over by us and others. And here they have clinched with seven games left.
Mathematically clinched. Pretty, so
647 winning percentage. I remember some people putting out these doom tweets like, to make the playoffs, the Oilers are going to have to win, you know, have a 700 record for the rest of the year. They're going to have to go, you know, some record. And I was thinking, well,
That's what they did last year.
I thought
that's what I was thinking.
They could do that. I was expecting them to have that like 700 record the whole season, you know, because this is a damn good team. So, yeah, there might have been one or two nights when I was despairing, but not as much as some folks. They were really focused on the mathematical improbability of the Oilers coming back. But this season is so long, right? Like, all they had to do was go on a winning streak, and they could seem to me that like all you need is like just reverse the first 13 games and the second 13 games, have that kind of record, and then you're back in it. And that's kind of what happened.
It is.
So it didn't seem to me that improbable that they could do that, although it was getting a little bit depressing at times, the San Jose loss, as I recall. But here we are, Bruce, heading into the playoffs, hopes somewhat high. I think it's a fairly sober Oilers fan base right now, who are aware of the faults of this team and its strengths.
Friday night, David.
Yeah, I guess I'm just projecting since I no longer drink anymore. I just think nobody drinks anymore. But you're right. Well, all right, Bruce.
Sober in one sense. I think I know what you meant by that.
Yes.
So.
All right. Two good things. Two bad things. Two numbers and one conundrum. Bruce, we'll go with two good things each, since it was the night the Oilers clinched, and they did so against a very good Avs team. Mm-hmm. What is your first good thing?
I got to go with bounces, David. The Oilers got some tonight, and Colorado got one on the 1-1 goal, where there was a snapshot, Drouin from the slot that hit McDavid and changed direction and caught the corner. And I'm thinking, oh no, here we go again, because the Oilers had pretty much dominated to that point. They did get a bounce, but a deserved bounce on Corey Perry's great deflection on the 1-0 goal, where he took a Darnell Nurse Californian shot from the outside out of the air, bounced it down off the ice, bounced over the pad just inside the post, like just how you drew it up, right? I mean, you throw your stick at shots like that, and sometimes they go your way, and that one did. But several of the other goals were scored by pucks that actually bounced off of the other team, including McDavid's goal that made it 2-2 when he came around behind the net and he stuffed it off the skate of, I think it was Devon Taves, late in the first period. Then Matthias Ekholm, who really stuck it to Colorado in several ways in this game, scoring what turned out to be the game winner on a rush with Draisaitl, where I'm trying to remember exactly how that, I mean, he didn't shoot it in, and I thought maybe he'd stuffed in the rebound, but in fact, the puck would, I think, kicked in off the defenseman's skate. And who was out there for...
Did Ekholm put it in? I don't even think he got the shot. I think it hit the defenseman, hit the defenseman and went in. I don't know. It was some... Yeah. It definitely, maybe it did go off the goalie, then off the defenseman, and I can't remember. It was And then a terrible coach's challenge on that play. I mean, that was a really bad decision by the Avs coach, because the goalie was outside the crease when he hit Ekholm.
Yeah, and then Evander Kane scored with 1.3 seconds left in the second period to break a 21 game goalless drought going in. And
in this off one, his body,
Yeah, this one was an outside shot that was just came up, hit him in, we'll call it the midsection, and bounced into the net. So a great way to, it's a how often play, very often it's how players break scoreless droughts. It's just getting, you know, finally getting a change in their fortunes almost, you know, because Kane's had some pretty bad luck along the 21 game route. He's hit some posts. He's been robbed a few times. He's had, you know, pucks deflect on him or what have you. So that was basically all of the first four goals that Edmonton scored that were, came from favorable bounces right around the Colorado crease. And even the fifth goal, you know, that McDavid scored, where it kind of ping-ponged around between him and Bouchard. And I believe that one even hit a Colorado player along the way. And McDavid just kind of shoveled in a lob shot over the pad of the goalie. And I'm not even sure that the D-man, and again, I think it was Taves, even might have got a piece of the puck on the way in, but he couldn't get enough of it to keep it out. And then finally, Kane scoring from a low angle, which the only thing it might have hit on the way in was the Colorado goalie, Alexander Georgiev, who definitely needed to make that save.
That was terrible.
Didn't, but puck hit him and went in. So again, you know, a good bounce. So Oilers were, you know, they were not scoring the pretty spectacular goals tonight. I think Ross Colton was the only guy who did that in this game. But they were going hard to the net and getting rewarded for it. They the Oilers put the hard hats and their work boots on for this game. And they earned this win, not by pretty hockey, but by, you know, just grinding it out and getting some breaks.
Yeah, so that brings me to my good thing of Ekholm's hit on Rantanen, his hits on Rantanen. And when I talk about the Oilers fans being sober in their assessment of the team, I think people's, you know, for a long time, we've been chasing the glory of the 1980s almost. And, any, you know, when you get such a high-powered offensive team as this Edmonton Oilers team is, you think they can win the way they did in the 80s. And no, the 80s teams, even when they were winning cups, did tend to trade chances because that worked for them. With Grant Fuhr and net and the finishing of that particular team. But they were, so they weren't ever a great defensive team. Maybe in 1990, maybe the 1990 Cup, they were fairly more of a unit, that kind of unit. But they were a ferocious team. They were an intimidating hockey team. And you can win a cup without being an intimidating hockey team. But most teams that win the Stanley Cup are intimidating hockey teams. And the Oilers really haven't been in the last two playoffs. They've been tough when they had to be. But I don't think they've been like the team that other teams feared physically. And I think to win the Cup this year, they're going to have to be. They're going to have to gear up and be that team. And I think they're fairly well built to be that team, with players like Nurse and Ekholm, with players like Kane and Perry and Draisaitl and McDavid, frankly, and others. But you know, there Carrick, he's a tough guy. There's others, but Ekholm's hit on Rantanen tonight was a reminder to me of what it takes to win in the playoffs. And I'm completely serious about this. You have got to be nasty and you've got to be physically punishing the other team. You've got to go after their best players and you've got to hit them hard. And Ekholm did that tonight with those hits on Rantanen, especially the second hit, which was, you know, a Nicholas Cronwell special. And it was a legal hit, but it was absolutely brutal. Like you get, the player Rantanen looked like he has a concussion. It looked like well, Bruce, he looked like he was knocked silly.
His head hit the ice, I think, after the hit is what happened.
So this is professional hockey at this level. You know, don't try it in beer league, my friends. In fact, just if you do it, you're a complete ass if you play that way at all in no hit hockey. Like it's completely ridiculous at other levels of hockey. But what is ridiculous at other levels of hockey is how you win in the NHL. And Ekholm's completely capable of being that kind of player. And so is Darnell Nurse. Mm-hmm. So is Kane, and so is Perry. So they've got at least four guys that are intimidating players. And I just think
Herne is pretty intimidating too.
I forgot. Probably the biggest guy. He's always got to be careful, Vincent DeHarnay, because he gets the big guy penalty, right? Right. 2 minutes for being so big. Mm-hmm. He will get that constantly.
Yeah.
So it's a bit of a challenge for him in that regard. But you're right, Bruce. DeHarnay is obviously on the list too of big, strong, tough, fearsome players on the Edmonton Oilers. So that was a Messier of a hit that Ekholm put on Rantanen. And it changed the game. Like it just felt, the game felt different after that. And that's how it feels in the playoffs when you have that kind of intimidating team. The last time the Oilers sniffed it, like really got close to the cup, Chris Pronger was that player. Just a feared player. And because he would hurt opposing players. They were afraid of him. And he made every other player on the team about an inch taller and 10 pounds heavier. Chris Pronger did. And so good for Ekholm setting the pace. So, and, you know, they haven't played like that all year, but we've seen it now and then. And I think we're going to see it in the first round of the playoffs. We're going to see a really, really hard Edmonton Oilers team.
Yeah. Well, the first hit behind the net, he just rocked Rantanen. And he's a huge guy, Mikko Rantanen, 6'4", 215. Like, he's every bit as big as Ekholm is.
Yeah.
And Ekholm just shivered his timbers behind the net. And then the second one that unfortunately put him out. And I don't like to see that to anybody. But he got, Ekholm in the post game. And you could see even at the time, he was telling the Colorado guys that wanted to take him out that, you know, it was a clean hit. It was, you know, it was hard and nasty even, but in no way did he break the rule, nor did Jack Johnson, who got the cheapest unsportsmanlike penalty in the aftermath of that for just sort of getting in Ekholm's face, which is what you'd expect. I mean, if anybody hit an Oiler like that, I'd want somebody at least to be in his face, you know, because that's what happens when hard edge hockey is played. And I thought the penalty there on Johnson was pretty thin, but the way the Oilers' power play was really the one element of their team that did not have a good game tonight. So it didn't, a penalty didn't really matter in the end. But
yeah, and look at the Avs. You know, they've loaded up with some really tough players. Like Josh Madsen is a fearsome hockey player. The other teams have him, but so do the Oilers. Mm-hmm. Bruce, what's your second good thing?
Yeah, I'm going to go with the play of Cody Ceci, who I loved his game tonight, and he was good in his own end of the ice. He was calm and confident and sure-handed with the puck, and steady on the defensive side, and contributing offensively to the point that I believe he had, two assists and plus four in this game for Cody Ceci. And he moved the puck up with a couple of pretty decent stretch passes. He rang one shot off the post himself. And I believe that was a shorthanded chance where first he made a big defensive play in his own zone. And then got it, you know, cleared the slot. And then Nugent Hopkins made another good play to chip it out of the zone and then race up ice. And CeCe joined the rush as the third guy. And Nuge put it on his tape. And CeCe rang a rocket off the post. And I just thought he was a strong contributor, and he had like no glaring mistakes, no times where, you know, Nathan MacKinnon skated around him and circles around him. Like, I didn't think he got himself into any trouble at all. And he played a few ticks under 20 seconds, four shot attempts, a hit, two takeaways, a block shot, but no giveaways, no penalties, no minuses. There was nothing negative on his ledger whatsoever. And I just thought he was strong, steady, safe for 60 minutes.
I agree. And my second good thing is his partner, Darnell Nurse, who was the GOAT of the last game. And much was said about that at the time. And most of it fair comment, honestly. Like, he's got a lot of heat, but he can't play that way. Mm-hmm. And he didn't tonight. He played a much more restrained game. And he's such an interesting player because he's got a high level of skill. He's such a great skater. He's physical. He can hit. He can really pass the puck. He rips good passes. But the more I think about it, I think he's the victim of his own desire to win and his aggression. The aggression that makes him great has him often trying to do too much out there. And it's consistent. He'll make bad pinches. He'll make plays in the neutral zone where he's trying to force things. And they'll get an odd man rush. He goes down early on his blocks. If you think about his blocks when they go wrong, it's almost always he's going down early on the ice before it's time to, because he's just so keen to make that play that his desire to win and his desire to force things, he's got to let the game come to him. And when he does, man, Darnell Nurse can play some strong hockey. And he did tonight. Both he and Cody Ceci kept a clean sheet at even strength, which means they did not make one mistake on a grade A shot against, which is outstanding for a defenseman. Like, mm-hmm. even the best defenseman is going to make one a game on average. So they just kept it clean and simple. And we're a big part of this Oilers win tonight. And again, the Oilers are going nowhere. If Darnell Nurse is running around in the playoffs and making bad risk reward decisions, they're out. Like, he's such a crucial piece of this team. And CeCe also, if he can't keep up, like if he's not up for it, you know, this is one of the big question marks hitting into the playoffs is this defense pairing. But I think they had a statement game tonight where they can, against a fast team and a good team, they can play well. And they play well when they're smart and disciplined, and they focus on defensive play. And that's what they did tonight. The Oilers, by the way, had 20, it was 20-9 for grade A shots for the Oilers over the Avs. And when it came to the subset of the most dangerous shots, five alarm shots, it was 3-3. So neither team actually had a ton of really outstanding chances, though there was lots of grade A shots, 20-9. Your bad thing, Bruce.
Yeah. I've got a lot of bad things to say about this game. I could harp on the power play a little bit, though they did have some chances, hit a couple posts, had some bad luck. So I'm going to rip Sportsnet.
Good, go for it.
Right at the end of the broadcast, and the Oilers are celebrating this big win about this over this big time rival, clinched a playoff berth, you know, post game celebration, you know, big team win because the whole team contributed. And they showed all of the stuff going on at the end of the game. And just about 2 seconds before the big thing that the crowd loves at the very end, when DeHarnay and Skinner do their high, high, high five that those two guys can do, the skinny, Vinny, Winnie, they cut away. And like, I was waiting for that. Come on, guys. Get it together. Know your fans. Just an unforced error by Sportsnet. So they get the bad thing tonight.
Fair enough. Fair enough, Bruce.
The producer or the switcher or whoever the hell it is that did that. Boo. It You know, it's a good night when that's your bad thing. So.
Yeah, and I'm having a trouble even thinking. So I'll just go with the goal that made the game 1-1. Mm-hmm. It was a little bit of a soft goal. We're not sure, we're not 100% sure, but it looked like the outside shot by Jonathan Drouin went in off McDavid's stick. And that's why Skinner looked so bad on it. I mean, a goalie should have, NHL goalies, when they see the puck, he saw that puck, they should make that save 85 to 90% of the time. And they do a shot from there, even a hard shot. So it must, it looked like it hit McDavid, and I think it did. So we'll let Skinner off. Although earlier on the play, he kicked out a pretty big rebound. And both McDavid and Draisaitl were a little late in covering off the passing options off the rebound. So they made marginal mistakes. So it was a tough one. Daharnay was a little, there was just a little bit of laxness on the play overall, I'm going to suggest. You know, like not the kind of tight focus that you need to stop an outside shot, but it wasn't that great a shot. So this is kind of a marginal bad thing. It wasn't terrible or anything like that, but I got to find something. So that's as bad as it got that game. So not that bad at all.
No, not bad at all.
What's your number, Bruce?
My number is 2. And there's a lot of 2s in this game. They only scored 2 goals in each period. They allowed 2 goals in the first period and then only 2 on the night as a whole. Another sort of standard Stu Skinner game. Gets beaten early and then slams the door the rest of the way. They outshot Colorado by 2-1 margin, 46-23. Just a monstrous advantage in shots on net. And here are the scoring leaders tonight. Evan Bouchard, 2 points. Cody Ceci, 2 points. Matthias Ekholm, 2 points. Leon Draisaitl, 2 points. Ryan McLeod, 2 points. Evander Kane, 2 points. Connor McDavid, 2 points. 7 different players with 2 points each. So that just seemed to be deuces wild was what's jumping off of this event summary. So that's my number tonight.
Nice. What's the name for people who like numbers?
Numbers guy.
What's a numismatist? Is that a stamp?
That's a stamp collector.
A numerologist is someone who looks in for meaning in numbers, right?
Yeah.
That's just kind of hocus pocus stuff. Okay.
It's like horoscopes. Numerology is to numbers guys what astrology is to an astronomer. Yeah, we're kind of, have fun with that. But I don't know about meaning in numbers. I just look for coincidences and patterns. And so anyway, all those 2s say that no one player, just dominated this game and dragged the whole team along for the ride. The whole team came for the ride together.
What is a person who takes joy in numbers? Because that's you, Bruce. You like the numbers.
I always have, my whole life.
Yeah. There doesn't seem to be a name. Bruce, my number, I have 2 numbers for tonight. And heading into the game, I was writing about the Oilers lines and about like what are the optimum line combinations. And this year I'm more open to than I have been in past years to McDavid and Draisaitl together with Hyman. For a number of reasons, we've talked about this before, the notion that it's going to be really hard to score in the playoffs against zone defenses, and you might need to have both of them together to actually crack open the opposing team and get a goal. Otherwise, you're not going to get one. So that's one thought. The other one that I've had is, well, Leon's, 8, 9, 10 years into his NHL career, he's still not a great defensive center. Maybe it's better to have him on the wing. So that's another thought. The other one is they're really having success this year, more success this year together than they've had in some time, that line. So when they've been together, including tonight, let me just find this. So they were on the ice for, as a line at least, 2 goals for and 1 against when all three of them were out there. And so this year that makes them 27 goals for and 10 against. They came into the game with a 74% goals for percentage, and they raised that, I think. I guess maybe they didn't. 2-1. But 74% goals for percentage, that's about as good as it gets for an NHL line. I think there was one year where McDavid, Dreisaitl, and Yamamoto were like at 81%, but they had only played about 100 and some minutes. This line's now played about 280 even strength minutes together, and 27 goals for, 10 against. That's a pretty compelling argument for going with that line. Mm-hmm. You know, the only thing you can say is that McDavid, Nugent Hopkins, and Hyman have also been really good, 34 goals for and 20 against in 467 minutes. And when you have Dreisaitl and Fogel and McLeod, they are 12-4. They have a 75% goals for percentage. So you can separate McDavid and Dreisaitl, put them on their own lines with existing wingers, and you can have two pretty good lines. So the only reason you might not do that is you might want Ryan McLeod centering his own line. And that's, we've seen him now with Corey Perry and Evander Kane a few games. And I've liked the line, but when I checked earlier today, they were 0-3 for goals for, 0-4 and 3 against it was like 45 minutes, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So that's not great, but their shot shares were really good. And I had been seeing them good. I thought that line might work because McLeod is so fast.
Yeah.
Kane's not slow. And Perry is, and McLeod and Perry are responsible defensive players, even if Kane is iffy. So you kind of answer that question a little bit. I don't want to see Kane and Dreisaitl together, as some people think we have to have for the playoffs. I just think that's madness. So I was wondering how they were going to do tonight. And Bruce, tonight they had their best game. You know, as a line, they were out for 3 goals for and none against. So now they're 3-3 on the season.
Nice.
It's a line that might work, and it might work for the reasons we saw tonight. Kane goes to the net. Perry goes to the net. Both goals were scored with players going hard to the net and harassing the goaltender. Excuse me, the second two goals. And the first one, Perry went to the net and scored on the Californian. The outside shot tipped into the net by a guy who played his career in California, who knows all about the Californian. So
he'd had a good chance on the doorstep just before that goal too.
He had
like a few seconds earlier.
Correct. So this line might be workable. This line might work as a third line that could outscore the opposition. You need the third line to be an outscoring line as well. You need all your lines to be at least even.
Yeah.
But you know, hopefully you want those top three lines. If you're going to win the cup, I think you need all three top three lines to be outscoring lines. So you can always count on McDavid's line to do that.
Yeah.
And now I'm not sure about a second line of Nugent Hopkins, Fogel, and Henrique. I wouldn't put my money on that being a line that will have playoff success. I think they'd get pushed out of the playoffs because Henrique and Nugent Hopkins aren't big players. And they're smart players, but they're not physical players. Nuch has got, frankly, a lot to prove in this playoffs. He's had a couple week playoffs in a row, in my view, and he's got to make an impact in this playoffs. He's really got to step it up. But my preference in the end, Bruce, would be to stick with McDavid, Hyman, and Nuch on one line, Dreisaitl, Fogel, and Henrique on the other, and then go with maybe this line and see how that works. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, well, Chris Knobloch said after the morning skate that he was specifically going powering up his first line to match up with MacKinnon Rantanen.
Yeah.
And that was what he wanted to do. And so he had a particular game plan in mind. And I'm not quite sure how many minutes they played against each other, and I'm kind of interested to know. So just give me a second here. I'm just going to look at
McDavid. I remember one shift in the first period where that McDavid line just were wheeling around the offensive zone, And that's exactly what you want to see when Nathan McKinnon's line's out there, is him stuck in the defensive zone. He got so frustrated, he started to get hacking away and getting physical like he does.
Well, he played 12 minutes against McKinnon and Drouin, and 5 against Rantanen, who, of course, left the game halfway through it, and 5 against Lehkonen, who came up and took his place, and also 10 minutes against Makar and Taves. And the Oilers outshot Colorado in that matchup. Well, I mean, they outshot him all game, but 11-7 against the forwards, 11-4 against that defense pair, that very, very high-end defense pair. And with McDavid on the ice, they were chasing, and, you know, that was the line that he scored both his goals against, all four of those guys. So,
what is good about that line, Bruce, Hyman, McDavid, and Draisaitl, in this playoff? I think they would be a really heavy line, like a real heavy hockey line on the forecheck. And if you want to beat Taves and Makar, I think that might be the way to do it, is hit them, get on them, forecheck them. You know, it's hard to rush chances. They're such great skaters that it's hard on the rush to actually beat them. But you start wheeling around the defensive zone, big guys wheeling around the defensive zone against smaller players, and suddenly you've got an opportunity. So that might be the ticket. But the question that would be then, who is your second line? And I guess you know, if you're having Draisaitl and McDavid on the same line, that makes, you're going to have, I guess it could be Henrique as the center and McLeod as the other center. And Nuge on the wing. I don't know who was on the wing tonight, Nuge or Henrique. It's kind of, I wasn't really playing. Like, I'm not exactly sure about that. Well, I like Henrique as a defensive center.
Took the faceoffs. Seven faceoffs for Nuge and none for Henrique. And I do think Henrique was playing wing throughout.
Maybe the answer would be to move one like Kane up to play with Henrique and Nugent Hopkins in that case, to have one really big, like Fogle's a fast player and somewhat physical, but I think you're going to need a really aggressive player if you're going to have Henrique and Nugent Hopkins together. So maybe it would be Perry or Kane that would move up, and then you'd have the third line might be like Fogle, McLeod, and Perry or Kane, like the other one, whichever one isn't with Henrique and Nugent Hopkins. Anyway, there's still, I like this. I like his experimentation and his Matt moving things around, seeing what works, what doesn't work. And I think this is a really interesting third line that he's concocted. I'm just not sure about the second line yet, I guess.
Yeah. Well, talk about greasing the wheels. Both Perry and Kane bring plenty of grease, and McLeod brings the wheels, and it's a nice combination. I liked McLeod's game tonight in terms of him being in there. Like some nights he's a perimeter player. He was not that tonight. And same goes for Nugent Hopkins. I thought he was really battling and giving as good as he got, and you know, not necessarily pushing his weight around, but not getting pushed around. And I thought the team in general showed resolve, and McLeod and Nugent Hopkins are two kind of weather vane players in terms of their involvement at that level of the game tells you sometimes a little bit about the whole team's willing to engage on the physical side of it. And Nuge, who did he mash behind the net? It was kind of dirty. He had the
Makar
guy.
Or Taves?
Yeah, the guy was not happy. Like, he had a scoring chance and he just sort of followed through.
On behind the net. Yeah, no, that was.
I think it was the guy, it was 26.
Walker.
Walker. Yeah.
Yeah. At least Walker didn't score 2 goals, so we didn't have to mash our teeth over that tonight.
Oh.
Yeah. Well, just think, you're Ryan McLeod, and on your wing, on one wing, is legendary tough guy Evander Kane, and on the other wing is legendary hard-ass coronary. Yeah. Yeah. You know, that's like playing with Chris. That's the Chris Pronger effect on Ryan McLeod. Suddenly he's like 6'5", 230 out there. He's wheeling around the ice. He thinks he's Eric Lindros. He played fantastic tonight. He was really skating well.
He had a really good game, and he was going to the dirty areas. I think Dreisaitl.
Everybody likes to say.
Dreisaitl said after the game, and I think it was a reference specifically to McLeod or to the team in general anyway.
Hey, Bruce, I wanted to bring up one thing on the power play that wasn't good tonight, but we have mentioned and we have talked about in the past if they want to get Bouchard shots, they might want to set up McDavid in the middle of the ice and put him off to the left so he can get off his one-timer. And I noticed that against Dallas, it wasn't particularly effective, but they were using that play. They were having McDavid circle to the middle of the ice, and two or three times he set up Bouchard for one-timers. I think that they may be, if they want to get the one-timer for Bouchard, they're going to have to do that. And it's maybe that's not a very effective shot for him at this point. Maybe he's got to work on that a bit, but he can shoot it. That's for sure. And I think if they get that shot going, that could be in a very, very effective play as well. The conundrum. They've got 7 games left. They're 5 points up on Vancouver. I think they're 3 points up. Vegas is either one or winning tonight. 3 points up now on Vegas. You know, what attitude do they take to these final games? You know, do they look at it as
what? Vegas 4, Arizona 7.
Vegas lost. Yes. Okay, so Vegas 7, is now 4. Just 1 point above LA. And the Oilers are 5 points above Vegas. Arizona just poured it on and beat those guys because I think Vegas was up 4-1, if I'm not mistaken.
They got 6 straight goals in the third period.
That's nice to see. Arizona. That's nice to see. Vegas. So, you know, 5 points up on Vegas, 6 points up on the Kings, 5 points behind Vancouver. Things could change, but it's unlikely. So, I think actually we're going to see what we've kind of been seeing, Bruce, is the Oilers aren't bringing their A game every night. And I don't think you'd want them to be, honestly, like at this point of the season. I don't think the most important thing is that they enter the playoffs healthy at this point.
Yeah.
And they don't get injured. Now, it's hard to play hockey. Like, you don't have to be playing hard to get injured. You can be playing, you know, you can just be standing around and get walloped by Mattias Ekholm coming down the boards and you're out. Like it's not, they don't necessarily go hand in hand. Nonetheless, like throwing a ton of hits, blocking a ton of shots will get you hurt in hockey. And you might want to save that for the playoffs. So I don't think we're going to see a lot of that from the Oilers, this kind of super physical game or blocking a lot of shots. And what I'm saying is, you know, there's a theory that you can't turn it off on. Some people say that you just can't turn it off and on. I don't agree with that. I think you can when you're a very veteran team. So I think the Oilers regularly do this. They turned it on, for instance, when they needed to win a bunch of games in a row earlier this year. They absolutely turned it on and started to play extremely disciplined hockey. So I think they're going to play smart hockey. But I don't think we're going to see really physical hockey or, you know, the whole block shots thing for the end of the season. And if it means they lose a game or two that they might have otherwise won, I'm okay with that. What's your thought?
Well, I'm just looking at the schedule down the stretch. We talked about a little bit about this last time and about how they have 5 games in the last 7 days, 6 in the last 9. And how the NHL so kindly moved up the playoffs about a couple of weeks ago that they announced.
They have moved it?
Probably. That's my understanding, is that it's coming earlier than the original plan, which the last year's season ended on a Thursday and the playoffs started on a Monday. And I thought, how dumb is that? Well, what the hell are they doing taking a dark weekend at the beginning of the playoffs? 1.9 seasons later, it sank into the NHL. What the hell are we doing having a dark weekend at the start of the playoffs? Let's change it. And if some team has got to play 5 in the last 7, well, too bad for them. Oh, it's the Oilers. Well, done. And so it's the Oilers. So what I would do if I was running the Oilers is that nobody of significance would play all five of those seven games in the last week of the season. And they're now at the point where they have enough flexibility in the cap with only 13 days remaining on the calendar. They have like $226,000 in cap space, according to Puckpedia. Well, if you call up Philip Roberg and Dylan Holloway and let's call Sam Gagne, you call up all three of those guys and they're making, you know, $800,000-$900,000 each. Well, you're only paying them like 1/15 of their salary because there's only 1/15 of the number of days left in the season. There's 192 days in the season. So instead of paying them $900,000, you have to pay them $60,000. Well, guess what? You can pay three guys $60,000 each and still have left over of $226,000. So they can, and there's no 23-man roster goes away right after the trade deadline. You can carry as many guys as you can afford and be cap compliant. So they could even wait, I think, till after next week's three-day break. And so they at least save some of that cap to pay off some of the bonus money that they But I would not be at all shy about bringing up three guys in for that last week. Heck, they might even bring up four. And
why not? You know,
bring up a goalie. And so in the last week, when you got five games, you give Stuart Skinner two starts and you give Cal Pickard two starts and you give the other start to
five games in seven days.
Friday, Saturday, Monday, Wednesday, Thursday.
So do you think they might sit up McDavid and Draisaitl for a game or two?
I think they should. Yeah,
I would say four games
in the last 7 days is plenty for any of their big minute guys.
Yeah.
So give McDavid, you know, and they're playing. You don't want to sit them out probably against Vegas, and you don't want to sit them out against Vancouver because you want to like beat Vancouver 10-0 if you can. Just saying. But you've got two games against Arizona that just slaughtered Vegas, but that's beside the point. The games are probably relatively meaningless. And one game against San Jose. Well, you bring up three guys from the minors and you put them in for those three games and you rest back home for a game and you rest Nurse for a different game and you rest
McDavid and Draisaitl
and Heim. That's enough.
It's more than enough. Rest them two games.
Well, maybe.
The big guys. Like, play McDavid two, like three out of the seven. And Draisaitl three out of the seven.
In 7 days. Yeah. Well,
yeah. Rest them for a couple games. Because, like, why? What are you doing? Why would you risk it? And give the NHL a big F you for giving you this schedule. You know, and they might not be happy about that, but yeah, they're nicked up. Tough. Exactly. We're not happy about Vegas's salary cap shenanigans either. So this is, you know, these are the rules that you gave us. This is the schedule you gave us. Mm-hmm. We'll do what we can with it.
I remember Greg Popovich in San Antonio Spurs, great coach in the NBA, and the Spurs had got, this was just when they were starting doing what they call load management, which has become epidemic in the NBA. People don't want it in the NHL, but it's going to come. And this is exactly what I'm talking about in this specific case. And Popovich had a game, just a ridiculous road trip where they played 5 and 6 or something. And to the last game of the road trip, he sat out all of his star players. And his team got slaughtered by like 40 points. And he was just, like you just said, F you, NBA, you gave us this crap schedule. And we weren't going to have a good game regardless. So I'm going to give my guys a bit of a break. We'll take the L. And fans in the other city can say, we wanted to see their stars. And, well, fix your bloody schedule and maybe you can, you know, Don't lopside it for one team at the end of the season.
One thing that works against the NHL teams engaging in load management, and I don't know how it works in the NBA, but like if you're up against the cap, You often don't have cap space right. to be doing that too much, but you do right at the right end at of the end. Year here.
You do, right and at they the can, end. And they should.
They, yeah, right they now. Should. And I hope they realize that. And I hope all the players get it through their heads. Like, there's nothing unmanly about sitting out a game to get ready for the playoffs. And this is serious stuff. So, yeah, we're not going to, against Arizona in a nothing game, you're not going to be playing. And maybe the last game of the year against the Avs, nothing game, you're not going to be playing because we need you ready come Saturday night or Sunday night. We're not. Is it Friday night that they would play or Thursday?
No. It's the last game is Thursday, Wednesday, yeah. Thursday.
So we'll play on Wednesday. Now,
but now supposedly going to start on Saturday. Now, surely to goodness, they wouldn't play on the day one of the playoffs. Like,
surely to goodness, the NHL will sure. give them that. So.
Well, I don't know who's fighting the battles for the Oilers with the league office, but they need to make a trade. Bring in somebody a little more effective because they get the short end on this schedule. Business. It seems like every year there's some
Bruce,
flaw.
You're next.
Different teams get it, but you know, five games at the right before the playoffs. That's a really, you know, they always had 5-7. I think early in the season, every team gets it once, but just right before the playoffs is, it's not right.
The next post you write is,
it is Sunday
McDavid,
night.
McDavid and Draisaitl should play just three of the last five games. Should sit out a couple games.
That's
down the stretch.
That's title for Sunday night. So people Excellent. Watching this podcast can beat me to it, but whatever. The point remains.
You've made it already. Everyone knows it came from you. All right. Bruce, thanks for talking tonight.
All right. Thanks for listening, everyone.
And in the meantime, and in between times, this has been another edition of the Cult of Hockey podcast.